Hi, I'm Susanna Houston from HSF's Head Office Advisory Team, and welcome to Reporting for Duties. Reporting for Duties is our limited podcast series aiming to provide bite-sized insights on corporate reporting and ESG. In this episode, we have Tim Stutt and Anna Caronio reporting for duty, and our topic for discussion is climate-related gaps analysis. Before we get into it, though, I would first like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land from which we are broadcasting today, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, and pay my respects to elders both past and present. So Anna, what is a gaps analysis and why should companies consider conducting them?
So as everyone knows, we've got the Australian Sustainability Reporting Standards coming in. And the idea with a gap analysis is to do quite a granular comparison of a company's existing disclosures against each of the requirements in the ASRS. And the idea behind it is to identify where the gaps are in compliance and where to focus efforts in terms of uplifting disclosure, but also in terms of where are the gaps where we need to do more work. So it might be things like underlying governance arrangements, etc. The tricky thing for some companies is going to be that it's not just the Australian reporting standards that they'll have to do a gap analysis against. If they've got global operations or parent companies or global entities in their group, they might actually also be captured by some of the overseas frameworks. So the international reporting frameworks that we've got might be the ESRS and CSRD.
And so, Tim, could you talk us through some of the lessons learned, some common gaps that we're seeing crop up between clients?
It's maybe a bit simplistic, but I think the biggest learning has been there is often quite a lot of gaps. Because a lot of climate and broader sustainability related reporting has traditionally been voluntary, it has often meant that companies haven't really always stuck to the letter of the disclosure framework or the guidance or the interpretations which then hang off it. So, for instance, with Task Force for Climate-Related Financial Disclosure, TCFD, it has 11 recommended disclosures, which are all pretty simple, concise things. But then it also has guidance which sits behind it, which is much more expansive. While companies would always report on the 11 recommended disclosures, actually there has been quite a bit of variability around the detail beyond that, and not all of the guidance has necessarily been fully addressed. That was actually a huge jump between TCFD in the UK being voluntary and then being regulated and companies having to mandatorily comply with it, in that they had to address most of the guidance which sat behind those recommended disclosures. And that was a really significant uplift in terms of the granularity and the level of detail required in reporting. What we're seeing with the gap analysis exercises that we're doing at the moment, both against the Australian Climate Reporting Regime, or ASRS, as Anna mentioned, and some of the broader regimes which various clients are also caught by. So in Europe, it's the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive, CSRD, and they have ESRS sitting under that, or a number of different ESRS standards. And then also the IFRS S1 and S2 global framework. So that's International Sustainability Standards Board's standards. In looking at the gap analysis exercises, actually, there will be a chunk which are just neatly ticked off, and you can be very pleased with yourselves for having had nice disclosures, which you will be copying and pasting. There is a chunk which is wholly missing, and they will be totally new requirements. The harder bucket has often been that there is a very large chunk which are partially compliant. So in some of the exercises we've done, it might be, say, 20 ticked off, 20% ticked off, 20% missing, and then the remainder are partially compliant. And that is because actually what used to be guidance and voluntary, now that these regimes are actually being regulated and they're being implemented as law, what was previously guidance is now often an operative provision. And when doing these gap analysis exercises, actually, a lot of it is not fully addressed. So we have done a number of exercises now where the amount of partially compliant things is fairly significant. And that is driving quite a bit of the uplift. Some of those have been quite simple, neat things which can be easily added in. So it might be extra detail about a particular process. It might be a metric which, if you have the underlying data for it, you can start disclosing. For some of them, though, they go to things which might be more of a change in process or a more substantial analysis type exercise. So, for instance, if you do scenario analysis against one scenario but not two, or if you need to start disclosing the potential financial impact, so say cash flow impact, financial position impact, financial performance impact of climate related risks and opportunities over the short, medium, long term, that might be something that if it's partially compliant or if it's missing, is a really substantial area which will require considered focus over quite a long period of time.
And the only other thing I would add to that in terms of another bucket to think about is where the actual disclosures sit. So, for example, some of the governance disclosures might be spread across the corporate governance statement, board committees and charters, and the annual report. So I think that a gaps analysis is a good opportunity for companies to reflect on how they would choose to package up this information moving forward and disclose it in a meaningful way.
I would say, actually, it is the slightly frustrating part of some of the gap analysis exercises, in that you get to the end of the analysis and you really do want to sit there cutting and pasting everything from all the different documents into one place and then starting to draft it together to get the report ready. So there is a real element of needing to pull together bits and pieces from a whole bunch of different places. And I might pass to you. I know, having worked on some of these exercises together, you'll have a view on some of the most common gaps coming up. Did you want to perhaps share a couple of those?
So one of the things that we're finding in some of the gap analysis that we're doing is that while there are some companies that have focused quite a lot on climate-related risks and have quite sophisticated disclosure around it, there's still a bit of work to be done around the framing for climate-related opportunities, because quite a few of the requirements under ASRS are actually about both. Surprisingly, even the risk management pillar sometimes has aspects of climate-related opportunities as well, so it's not just focused on that risk piece. Another area that we're seeing as being a bit of a gap for uplift among some companies is disclosure of underlying assumptions, contingencies, those sorts of things, because that's quite a key to some of the forward-looking disclosures, and also helps mitigate some of the risks around forward-looking statements. And then the other really big one is a lot of the disclosure requirements are not just about what arrangements you've got in place, so what risk management you've got in place and what governance arrangements you've got in place, but they're actually a lot about the how. So how is a company doing reporting, and who's involved in the process, and how frequent is it? Those sorts of issues come up. So I think that in a lot of cases there will be existing arrangements that can be disclosed, but the disclosure currently isn't there. So it's about bringing that all together, including getting the right stakeholders who have that information and know about what sort of board reporting there is, getting them involved so that they can contribute to the disclosure.
And I do sometimes think of that move to the how, particularly for the governance pillar, talking about how targets are set and how the board assesses whether or not it has the skills and competencies to oversee climate. And the how aspects can be a bit mind-stretching sometimes in terms of describing it and getting it on a page. And back to where you sort of started, Anna, I think the opportunities part is also often, it's done. Everyone understands that the opportunities are going to the board, and they're fed into strategy, and they're fed into the investment proposals, and they form part of the investment papers, and it happens in practice. But actually describing how it happens and having a consistent kind of description which works can be a little bit curly.
So I think that the key bite-sized insight is that gaps analyses are really worthwhile doing for companies to get ahead of the eight ball. Thanks for joining us. This was Tim Stutt, Anna Cronio and Susanna Hewson reporting for Duty.
You have been listening to a podcast brought to you by Herbert Smith Freehills. For more episodes, please go to our channel on iTunes, Spotify or SoundCloud and visit our website, herbertsmithfreehills.com, for more insights relevant to your business.